Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We're sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by Jeff Rimbold. There is no off-season in the NFL. And Jeff, we've got a lot of news to get through today with the franchise tags, the players that didn't get franchise tagged. You know, I spent some time with players last week in the UK that we can talk about, but it's always, it seems to be, a busy time in the NFL.
It is, and this time of year, everybody's trying to figure out where they want to go with their rosters. And, you know, you're looking ahead to the draft, you're looking ahead to free agency next week, and franchise tags have been given out and not given out. So there's an awful lot of action, both, you know, in the scouting part of the game right now, while the coaches are busy, you know, evaluating players and evaluating their schemes. And it never stops. It is a nonstop cycle in the National Football League.
It's a nonstop turnover of rosters as well, Jeff. And I looked at some of the headlines from the past 7 days, and you see Reggie Bush released by the Detroit Lions, Todd Herriman's veteran offensive lineman released by Philadelphia, Brian Hartline at wide receiver by Miami, Harry Douglas and Steven Jackson by the Atlanta Falcons, Cortland Finnegan by the Dolphins. The Buccaneers are shopping Anthony Collins, who they spent big on in free agency last year. Miami are trying to find a trade partner for Mike Wallace. Andre Johnson has been told he can seek a trade by the Houston Texans. And Jeff, the one thing I thought about this as I looked at it is that there doesn't seem to be a middle class in the NFL anymore, because if you're a good player and you get to a certain number of years, you're going to be knocked out of that roster, because it seems there's either superstars who get paid huge amounts of money, or where teams are trying to find cheaper players. I mean, would that be a fair assessment?
I think so, and I think the fact of the matter is as you get up in salary, and you see it with the guys that you mentioned, there are a number of those guys that are still very good players, but they're up in the salary cap now, and they become cap hits. You just can't afford to keep them and bring them back at the numbers that their contracts hold. So, you know, those are the things that every team is dealing with right now. You know, we talk about that scenario. You're Dallas and you put the franchise tag on Dez. Really, that almost guarantees now that it's going to be really difficult, you know, to get your running back to come back. So, you know, I where Murray ends up and how much money he's going to make, I think that's, you know, again, it's all part of this process that we're going through right now.
Yeah, we've got a lot of questions that we'll get to in the mailbag a little bit later on. Free agency, of course, begins 9 p.m. UK time, March the 10th. So we're a week away from that. Teams are shuffling their rosters. They are making franchise tag moves. And let's just address that. Then we've got a question from Gary Pugh in the mailbag, who says, last night saw the franchise tag deadline pass. What exactly is a franchise tag? So I've got a little explanation here for our dear listeners, Jeff. So, I mean, basically, the franchise tag, teams can apply the franchise tag to one player each year, and it basically prevents an unrestricted free agent from hitting the open market. They're paid an average of the top five players at their position, or 120% of their salary, whichever is greater, which is why when you look at Ndamukong Suh, he would have been paid $27 million under the franchise tag by the Detroit Lions. So they chose not to franchise tag him. It's basically a stopgap, isn't it, Jeff, just to try and buy time for a long-term deal. Some players like it, others don't. So, first of all, your thoughts on the overall view of why we have a franchise tag.
Well, we have a franchise tag because the NFL, like all businesses, if they can get it, they want players to stay in one market. When players move around too much, you know, it creates fan unrest. The fans want their stars to stay in one place. It's not like the old days now, you know, where you would get a player would come to the league and he would play for that team his entire career because he was restricted. There was no free agency. The players couldn't move. They were basically there as long as the clubs wanted them and then discarded. Then as players gained free agency through collective bargaining, you know, and the union became stronger, the players gained the ability to move. Well, the clubs then wanted some, you know, they wanted some, you know, recourse about how they can keep their stars. And, you know, this is what was negotiated between the Players Association and the league. And I think it's good. It gives the clubs a bit longer to, you know, hold on to their star players and negotiate with their star players, because just because the guy is tagged doesn't mean that they all just say, okay, well, you know, here we go, let's play. Now they have that entire year to renegotiate or negotiate with that player all the way up, I believe it's July 15th.
Yeah.
They can negotiate with that player. So the agents get more time, the general managers get a better feel, and hopefully the clubs are able to hold on to their superstar players and, you know, keep them in the market where they came to, you know, came to stardom.
One other question I had from the mailbag, I'll take care of this. James Baker says, with Dez Bryant being tagged, can he talk to other teams or not? He can't, James. I mean, basically, as Jeff has alluded to there, you're buying time for the team that puts the franchise tag on him. Now, there are two types of tag. So you've got the franchise tag, and then you've got what is known as a transition tag. We only have one player get the transition tag this year, and a transition tag means that the team, the Miami Dolphins, put Charles Clay on that transition tag. Now, if anyone wants to take Charles Clay, they have to offer him more than the $7 million that the Miami Dolphins are going to pay him on the tag. Then Miami have 1 week to match that offer. And if they don't match it, they get draft pick compensation from the team that takes Charles Clay. So it's unlikely that Miami lose Charles Clay. Here are the ones that are franchise tagged then. And really, at the first start, it's clear they affect the pass and they are clear stars for their team. Justin Houston, the outside linebacker for the Kansas City Chiefs, led the NFL with 22 sacks last year. Demaryius Thomas, wide receiver of the Denver Broncos. Dez Bryant, as we've mentioned, wide receiver of the Dallas Cowboys. Jason Pierre-Paul, who has been a quality pass rusher for the New York Giants. Charles Clay with the transition tag. The only exception, Jeff, is Steven Goskowski, kicker of the New England Patriots. And I've got a question here from Jonathan Justin, who says, which player is the biggest surprise to not get franchise tag? So we know about Julius Thomas and Ndamukong Suh, DeMarco Murray, but what were your thoughts when you saw Steven Goskowski get franchise tagged and Devin McCourty, who's one of the top cover safeties in the NFL now with the Patriots, didn't get tagged?
You know, nothing that they do in New England really surprises me.
Because you know they've probably got a plan, right?
They have a plan, and I'm sure they didn't, you know, decide to tag Goskowski just because they wanted to tag him. I mean, it wasn't a knee-jerk reaction, and they have a plan, obviously, for McCourty. They've got some issues. You know, Revis is set to hit the free agent market. So they've got some things in New England that they're going to have to deal with. But always they have a plan. I'm sure they've had a plan all year long. This is not going to sneak up on them. Belichick runs that organization extremely efficiently, you know that they you know, certainly do have a plan on how they're going to, if they have to replace McCourty, how they're going to do that. If they have to replace Revis, how they're going to do that. I think the one that surprised me, and when I say surprised me, it's because I really thought that they would either have him under contract or tag him, was Jerry Hughes in Buffalo.
Yep.
Because, you know, Jerry Hughes is a guy now, you got to understand, in the last two seasons, he's averaged 10 sacks and 20 quarterback pressures a year. He's a consistent edge pass rusher. Those are hard to find. And, you know, you look at Pierre Paul's an edge pass rusher. You look at Justin Houston, he's an edge pass rusher. Hughes is their best edge rusher. And I really felt like that they would either have him under contract or tag him, because I just can't see him leaving, you know, that defense. I just don't think Rex is going to let that happen.
Jerry Jones said that he wouldn't let Dez Bryant walk away, and obviously he's locked him down for at least a year, and obviously they're going to want to negotiate a long-term deal there. But do you feel that that was a chance to see, you know, that Bryant can continue to grow as a player off the field, because there have been some concerns there?
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting. I don't know, there was all this talk last week about some videotape that was going to come forward right before the tag, you know, the tags were set to be laid, you know, with Dez in some, you know, involved in some I don't know what it was, some craziness off the field. So, again, that never happened. I think this is kind of the stuff you always get with Dez. There's always something swirling around him. But you know that Jerry Jones is committed to the kid. I mean, he's made it evident that, you know, he wants him to retire a Cowboy. He wants him to be a Cowboy forever. And, you know, when Jerry Jones wants something to happen, he's got an awful big wallet. And, you know, he has a way of making those things happen. You know, he had said earlier in the year that he wanted Murray and Dez back. Now, I think it will be interesting to see how he's going to be able to accomplish that inside the cap. Although, the cap is going to grow by 10 million this year, and that's going to, you know, that again, it'll be interesting to see how that affects these teams.
We'll talk about Ndamukong Suh, DeMarco Murray as we get into the mailbags. I've got a couple of questions on them, but you're right, Jeff. The cap has gone up to $143.28 million. That's up $10 million from 2014. It's up. There was a $10 million jump from 2013 to 2014. So I've got this question I want to ask you about, actually, and it says, Jonathan Justin, again, it's two questions from Jonathan, but this one's a good one, who says, is forcing teams to spend a minimum cap amount a good idea, especially for teams looking to build through the draft? So teams have to spend 89% of the salary cap this year. There's a lot of teams that haven't reached that yet. And over the course of the next 4 years, 95% of the cap has to be spent as a league. But I guess this is to make sure that owners don't sit on that money, Jeff, which is coming in through TV revenue and as part of the collective bargaining agreement was agreed to be shared between the players and the owners.
Right, and I think you're exactly correct on that, Neil. It ensures competitiveness. You know, it wasn't so very long ago that it was the St. Louis Cardinals at the time. There was so much talk about they were just happy to be in the league and share the revenues with the other teams. Well, you know, they've tightened that down now. You can't be a bottom feeder in the NFL and just, you know, live off the proceeds of, you know, what the, you know, because it's shared revenue in the NFL. That's what's so unique about the NFL. It's here, I just saw a thing this morning that, you know, Forbes' list of billionaires is well represented with NFL owners. Well, you've got some of the biggest capitalists in the world that are working in a communistic society where they share everything. It's really a unique situation. But by forcing the teams to spend, it helps ensure that they are going to go out and work to be competitive. So if you're going to force an owner to spend his money, he obviously wants a return on his investment, and that's the theory behind forcing the teams to use at least 89% of the cap.
Okay, Jeff, so now we're going to move on to our state of the franchise in a couple of minutes, St. Louis, Minnesota, and Cleveland. But I wanted to just talk a little bit about last week. We managed to spend some time with Odell Beckham Jr., Menelik Watson, the British tackle of the Oakland Raiders, and Lawrence Okoye of the San Francisco 49ers. And Jeff, just first of all, it sounds, and you won't be surprised by this, Lawrence is being worked very hard by Jim Tom Sula, as you would expect, right?
You knew Jimmy was going to get his pound of flesh out of him now. They know that, but that's what Okoye needs. If he's going to develop, he needs a guy that's going to push him and challenge him and demand that he do things the right way, because he comes with no football background. And I think, you know, if you're going to get a piece of clay, if you will, as talented, as athletically gifted as Lawrence Okoye is, there's no better guy to give him to than Jimmy T.
Odell Beckham Jr., Jeff, I managed to spend a couple of days with him. I mean, watching him catch passes, and then we were down at Tottenham Hotspur's training ground, and he was going in goal and, you know, saving shots. Just one of those natural sportsmen. But a couple of things I just wanted to share here. You know, obviously I asked him a bunch of different questions over the course of 2 days. And it was interesting, you know, just the drive that he has. And I think that's appropriate as we're looking to young players who are coming into the NFL now or about to come in through the NFL draft. And, you know, Odell's got the football world at his feet. And he said to me at one point, it really stuck in my mind. He said, you know, the big plays that he makes, they kind of come and go. And he said, but plays that he doesn't make or passes that he drops, he said, they actually keep him up at 2 or 3 in the morning. He said every season, he's going to set himself a goal of between 1,800 yards and 2,000 yards. Even if that's like an NFL record and he falls short, it's going to make him have outstanding years. And I said, how do you want to be remembered at the end? And he said, in the same conversation as Jerry Rice. I mean, this was a guy, Jeff, just a couple of examples there of how driven he is. I mean, we know about the athletic skills, but this is a very driven young man.
Well, you know, that's the kind of guy, that's the kind of competitiveness, that's the stuff that you can't measure at the combine that every team should spend more time on, in my opinion, because those are the things that separate guys. Those are the things, you know, when you put all this money in these kids' hands, if that kid isn't innately driven, there are just so many distractions, so many ways that they can lose their focus, so many ways that they can not fulfill their potential. And, you know, it's great to hear of a young kid like that with that kind of drive to succeed because, you know, we're getting ready for the draft. You know, we're starting to ramp up for the draft. And, you know, that is the part that you can't measure. You know how fast they are. You know how high they can jump. You know what their body composition is. You know all of those things. But is the kid driven to be great? And that's the rare ones. Those are the ones that really have the chance of being the ones that we'll talk about 20 years from now.
Yeah, he certainly seems to be a very driven young man. Let's get into our state of the franchise series then. We'll continue with the St. Louis Rams. So the Rams went 6-10 in 2014. Offense was ranked 28th in the NFL, defense 17th. So they were 6-10, as I said. They had quality wins over Seattle, San Francisco, and Denver to show that on their day they can beat anyone in the league. But yeah, again, there was problems at the quarterback position. Sam Bradford tore his ACL in his knee on August 23rd versus Cleveland. That left the Rams with Austin Davis and Sean Hill. It was the same torn ACL that cost Bradford half of his 2013 campaign. So Jeff, if we start there. Since 2011, Sam Bradford has missed 31 regular season games out of a possible 64.
You know, this is really the thing with him. Now, you know, he came into the league out of Oklahoma with, you know, tremendous, tremendous potential. Great accuracy, gets the ball out of his hands well, you know, had all the things you look for. He just can't seem to stay healthy. You're talking about two ACLs, and they can't protect him. And that's not a good, you know, that's not a good recipe for success at the quarterback position. Now, it was interesting, initially a couple weeks ago, St. Louis kind of let it out there that they'd be willing to listen to trades for, you know, for
Cleveland
Sam Bradford.
Cleveland and Buffalo were mentioned, weren't they?
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, you know, Jeff kind of pulled that back and said, no, we're committed to that guy. Now, you know, again, this is a team that's had injury issues, not just at the quarterback position. You know, both Chris and Jake Long, you know, those are two high-level players that they lost for the course of the season. This is a critical year in St. Louis, in my opinion, for Fisher, because he's in his third year now. He's going to have to show that they can have some consistency, because like you said, they've been kind of a team that will rise up and play extremely well 1 week, and then, you know, they can't sustain that over time. So I think that's going to be the big thing. And can they keep Sam healthy? Can they keep him on 2 feet? Can they protect him enough, you know, that he can, you know, hopefully fulfill some of the potential that he showed coming out of, you know, coming out of Oklahoma a few years ago? But, you know, I don't know. I just, you look at this football team and, you know, they're not very good at center. Jake Long's talking about not playing, retiring because he's, you know, his injury history. Now we'll have to see how that goes, but you know, it's a tough situation. You know, and you know, they got another guy, Barksdale. It looks like he might go to free agency.
Yeah, Davin Joseph, you know, free agent.
That offensive line is not very healthy, and you know, that's when you got a quarterback who's coming off a, you know, double ACL surgery, that's not a good recipe for, you know, success. And you're playing in a very, very tough league, division.
Brutal division. That offensive line gave up 47 sacks in 2014. So we'll look at some of the other offense. I mean, Trey Mason came in at running back. Wasn't special, but wasn't bad. You know, 765 yards, four touchdowns. Wide receiver was... I guess they flashed stuff. I mean, Brian Quick got hurt, shoulder injury, and he'd got off to a strong start. Kenny Britt was kind of okay. Stedman Bailey showed us some stuff. To me, it looks like there's no true number one there. Jeff, Tavon Austin was a disappointment again.
Yeah, and you know, you look at that bunch, and you know, is it because they were because of who was trying to throw the ball to them, and you know, that's why the productions were low, or was it because they're just not? What I don't see again is a consistent number one there. You know, who's that guy? Kenny Britt's not that guy. He's a flash guy.
Yep.
And Tavon hasn't, you know, he's kind of plateaued. Didn't take that step that we all thought he was, you know, had the ability to take. And so, you know, again, you know, Fisher wants to run the football. That's, you know, that's been his mantra. That's what they hung their hat on when he was at Tennessee. And, you know, you've got an offensive line that makes it really difficult for you to run the ball and protect the quarterback. So if they're going to win, they're going to need to win with defense and you know, special teams. And, you know, again, they've got some challenges on defense. They need some help at linebacker. You know, Jimmy Laurinaitis didn't play very well last year. And, you know, so, again, I think this is a team that has to get around that 8-9 win total, you know, or Fisher may be, you know, out of St. Louis.
Front four is the strength of the defense, right, Jeff? I mean, add Donald now to the mix. If Chris Long comes back healthy, and
if Chris comes back healthy, and you know, you got Aaron Donald, who's going to be has shown in his rookie season that he can be everything that we thought he would be when you looked at him last year coming out of Pitt, you know, and so that's what they can do. They can rush the passer. They can get after you up front. But again, do they have enough athleticism at linebacker? I would think that's a place you got to look in the draft. I would think, you know, you're looking at a team that has so many needs on the offensive line, and you know, that first pick, you got to think that's a place where they're going to have to, you know, it's the 10th pick, right? So, you know, you should get a real good football player at that 10th pick, and that guy needs to be a starter and not just a starter. You want that guy to be a guy that's going to be a Pro Bowler one day.
Jeff, I don't think for one minute he's going to be there at number 10, but if Marcus Mariota is there, what do they do?
Oh, boy.
Because they've got one year left on Bradford's contract, and he's going to be paid $13 million in 2015.
Yeah, and you know, and you got Sean Hill's your backup, who's I think Sean Hill's a dependable backup in the league, but he's got to be, what, 36 years old, 37 years old?
Yeah, he was NFL Europe guy, wasn't he? Yeah,
and Austin Davis is, you know, he flashed, and then he got his big opportunity, and it didn't go well for him. So, you know, I would think if there was a quarterback there at 10, that would be really, really difficult for them to pass on. But I just don't think that Mariota will go that long.
I don't. I mean, and Bradford, the frustrating thing is, Jeff, I go back to a conversation I had with John Elway a few years ago, and I asked him, who are the quarterbacks, pure passers, you like to watch in the NFL? And he said, in terms of pure passer with their technique and ability to put the ball on the money, he said, I love watching Sam Bradford. And so, you know, you've got potentially a top 10 quarterback if you can just keep him upright.
Yeah, and that's, you know, exactly what we talked about. You know, Neil, when he came out of Oklahoma, everybody loved him. And the thing they loved about him, the two things that they loved about him more than anything else were his decision-making and his accuracy. Mm. And those are the two things that most, if you talk to most quarterback coaches, those are the things they want, decision-making and accuracy. They can work around a less than big arm. You know, a big arm's a bonus. But if you can't make decisions and you can't put the ball where guys can catch it, it doesn't matter how big your arm is. So his challenge, again, is just they have been so bad on the offensive line, and he's gotten hit so much. Mm. And, you know, again, two surgical knees. And now, again, in this day and age, you know, the technology and the surgeries are so much better than they've ever been. But, you're talking about all that time missed, all those reps missed, all of that stuff. It just makes it tough for you when you're coming off of two surgical knees.
All right, let's get a couple of bits of information out there, and then we'll wrap up with the St. Louis Rams. So free agents are Davin Joseph and Joe Barksdale on the offensive line. Sean Hill, who Jeff just mentioned, would be a good re-signing. Kendall Langford at defensive tackle. Alex Carrington, defensive end. Kenny Britt at wide receiver. Lance Kendricks at tight end. Their salary cap situation is not good. 26th best in the NFL. They're just $6.89 million under the cap. They're going to play Arizona twice, Seattle twice, San Francisco twice. They play other games at home: Chicago, Detroit, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Tampa Bay. away, Green Bay, Minnesota, Baltimore, Cincinnati, Washington. So a very tough schedule. Gil Brandt of NFL.com lists the needs as quarterback, cornerback, and running back. But I'm with you, Jeff. I would start or take a good long look at that offensive line. So it's a must improve season for the Rams. I mean, it's only going to take a couple of games to get them to 500, but we're not talking that. If they're going to get to the playoffs, do you see it at the moment?
No, I really don't. I just, and I'm a big Jeff Fisher fan. Yep. I think he does a heck of a job. I think he got as much out of his football team and in Tennessee as he could get out of them. And I think he does the same thing with the Rams, because again, you look at the Rams, they will rise up and they will beat good football teams. Mm. But he just doesn't have enough players to be consistent and to win consistently. And that's number one is the quarterback. And again, I don't agree with Gil on I think the offensive line.
I agree.
Is the number one player.
We just listed it. Scott Wells, Joe Barksdale, Jake Long. There's all your problem areas right there. You know, I mean, you invested
and
in.
There's only
great,
five of them, and right. If you list three as problem areas, you got problems.
So there's three. I don't know what the percentage that is, but it's over half.
It's not good.
No, exactly. Let's move on to the Minnesota Vikings then. They went 7-9 in 2014. They'll have the 11th pick in the draft. They were 27th on offense. Defense was above average. They were 14th in the NFL. Mike Zimmer's first year as a head coach. They had the Adrian Peterson scandal to deal with, and which would never have been easy for any coach to deal with and try and keep the locker room away from that. But they did steady the ship, and they went 4-4 in the second half of the season. And I think importantly, Jeff, they were 1-3 with Christian Ponder or Matt Cassel at quarterback. With Teddy Bridgewater under center, they went 6-6, and he showed the way to look ahead for this team.
I think this is a team on the rise. Mm-hmm. I really do.
Yep.
You know, you look at all of the things that you mentioned, all of the issues that they went through, but then you think about when Bridgewater got his chance. He really solidified that football team. He
yep.
really helped that offense mature. They've got some issues, right? To me, going back and you look at the football team, is Cordell Patterson a number one?
Yeah.
Right? Now, he's shown athleticism, but the same things that we talked about, going back, and I can remember when we talked about the kid coming out of Tennessee. He had only played, he'd been going mm-hmm. to junior college, played 1 year of college football. He had tremendous athleticism, but he was raw and really rough in terms of ability to run routes and,
yep.
the fine things of being a great receiver. That's still who he is today.
Well, and Jeff, I would add to that, there was stuff around the time he came out and was drafted that he was in team meetings and he was looking at when he was meeting teams at the combine, and he's looking at his phone and reading text messages while he's meeting with the teams. And as a rookie, I got to meet him, and he was a little bit strange. He was a little bit prickly to deal with and a bit immature. And I thought the way he ended 2013, he would become a star in 2014, because I thought he looks like a Randy Moss type player in terms of build and the way he can run. He could run the football out of the backfield. He could catch it out of the backfield. He could catch it, as a true number one. And it never has emerged. So part of that must be because he's got the physical skills. So part of that must be that the maturity or the work ethic or bringing it all together has not been there.
Well, it's something. It's got to be something. Mm. And obviously you start number one with the maturity factor, right? Then you look at his want to, the mm-hmm. thing that you talked about, what drives Beckham to be Beckham, that obviously isn't a part of, or has not been a part of
yeah.
Patterson's personal profile, right? Because you just don't see the improvement. Now, he's getting coached, I'm telling you. They're coaching the heck out of the kid.
Oh, you know, right? Mike Zimmer will be pushing him, yeah. He's...
Yeah, but you got to take coaching. That's the biggest thing. You can have the greatest coach in the world, but if the athlete won't take the coaching,
yep.
then you've got issues. Now, there also is some. There's been comments about his character and his intelligence. And so, again, you factor all those things in. That's why he's not taking that next step. Doesn't mean he can't, but certainly if you're a Vikings fan, there's a guy who who has all the physical tools you mentioned. And you never, to me, you say when you evaluate a player, one of the things you try and do in scouting and in personnel is, okay, he is like this guy, or he, you know, has similarities to this guy.
Yep.
Well, the guy that you just mentioned is a Hall of Fame receiver, right? And certainly he has those kinds of physical tools, but he doesn't have the other stuff yet. It hasn't clicked in yet. Well, hopefully it will. You know, hopefully it will. But I think, like I said, I think this is a team that, you know, is on the rise. I really like this team. I think that they're in a, you know, and they're coaching staff, and I thought Zimmer did a great job of, you know, managing the team, kind of steering it through all those choppy waters with the Adrian Peterson thing and all of that, and you know, whether if they decide to cut him loose and go another direction, I think they're ready to go. I saw it was interesting the other day, Neil, which really kind of surprised me. They're talking about renegotiating Chad Greenway's contract to get him back.
Yeah.
I think personally that's a guy that I would just move on.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, they struggled to defend the run, Jeff. And you know, and that's an expensive player at the moment. You know, he's been a leader, I know, for that team. But, yeah, I think maybe that is a – I would be with you on that. I would probably move on there.
Well, I think just, you know, you look at him and say, all right, now he's not, he's a guy that he can't put in coverage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they've got to get better at linebacker. He's not, in my opinion, he's not a Zimmer kind of guy. And so I was a little bit surprised that they were going to, even if they renegotiate his contract, make him, you know, more cap friendly. I just didn't see that as it's a move on situation, but, you know, apparently they feel like he has some other intangibles that they need, you know, again, but, here's the team again that if you can just get a few critical pieces, you know, get a guard.
Yep.
You know, they're going to – I'm a Matt Asiata fan.
Let's look at some of the numbers here, Jeff. Matt Asiata had 570 yards and 9 touchdowns. Jerick McKinnon, 538 yards. Didn't have any touchdowns. But there's a pair there who've combined to go over 1,000 yards and score 9 touchdowns. It's a decent running attack. The offensive line still well anchored by John Sullivan. You would say, actually, there's some problems in pass protection. They had 51 sacks given up, fifth most in the NFL, 96 quarterback hits. So there's a need to upgrade the offensive line a little bit. But, you know, you could add another running back to that pairing there in the draft, couldn't you, without it being too expensive?
Yeah. Well,
if they moved on from Peterson.
Yeah, because this is, you know, everybody talks about it's a devalued position, which means there are going to be some backs available. Mm. Right, and there's some pretty good backs in this draft, in my opinion. So, you know, that's a position where you say, okay, can you get in the second day, can you get yourself a guy? Yeah, I think you can. Mm. Plus the fact, now, you know, everybody in Minnesota is spoiled because they've had, you know, Peterson knocking on the door 2,000 yards, you know, and every season. But the reality of it is, this is a better football team that doesn't need to rely on the running back to make every play for them. Mm. You know, they've got a quarterback now that has shown that he can make plays. If you do it back by tandem, you still got 1,000-yard back, as you said, because the two guys combined for a little over 1,000. In my opinion, get yourself, you know, I think when Kyle Rudolph gets back healthy, you know, he's got to knock that injury bug a little bit too, but you got a Pro Bowl tight end. Get yourself a receiver if you can find a receiver in free agency. You know, there's a, you know, that guy that's just a little bit south of you didn't get tagged. So, you know, I think that'd be one guy I'd go after. But I think you also got to say, you know, how can you help yourself? Xavier Rhodes, good corner. Mm. Get yourself another corner. That allows you to, you know, you're in a division where you're going to have corners. You know, you got everybody in the league. Everybody in that division seems to have, you know, receivers. So I think I'd look for a corner. I'd look for, you know, more athleticism at linebacker. Second day, get me a running back. And then you always take an offensive lineman if you can find one, you know, those, especially a tackle.
Yeah. Gil Brandt says they need offensive tackle, running back, cornerback. Salary cap situation is the 17th best in the NFL. They've got $19.9 million to spend. They won't worry about losing Christian Ponder, who is a free agent. Joe Berger, Charlie Johnson on the offensive line. Vlad Dukas are free agents. Their opponents will be Chicago twice, Detroit twice, Green Bay twice. They also play Seattle, St. Louis, Kansas City, San Diego, New York Giants at home. Arizona, San Francisco, Denver, Oakland, and Atlanta on the road. So, Jeff, one other guy I want to just mention, and sorry, then you can carry it. Harrison Smith was outstanding. 92 tackles, 3 sacks, 5 interceptions. He's the leader of the defense.
He's coming into his own now, really. And it was really interesting to me because, you know, he played when he first came into the league. You know, he played in that Tampa 2 system where he was a too high safety, and you know, that's really not his strength. You know, he's so physical and such a great presence around a box that I think the switch to Zimmer's defense has really helped him and really elevated his play. And like you say, they could use another safety around him.
Yeah.
But, you know, as you go back, you're talking about the offensive line, and again, we didn't talk about Khalil. Now, Khalil has historically been a good player for them.
Yep.
But he was hurt all last year and played through some injuries. So I think it's going to be interesting to see whether he can recapture a little bit of, you know, what he was. Dukas, on the other hand, I think that's a move on from it deal because he, you know, he's not, since he came into the league, you know, he's not been able to really establish himself as a legitimate good player as a starter. So, again, that'd be an area where I would move.
All right, let's move on to the Cleveland Browns then. Let's cast our minds back to November the 23rd. The Cleveland Browns were 7-4. They were in first place in the AFC North. And how did they deal with prosperity? Well, they lost 5 in a row. They ended 7-9. Johnny Manziel is in rehab. Josh Gordon is suspended for the entire 2015. The general manager is under investigation for illegally text messaging during a game. They've cut Brian Hoyer, who made too many mistakes. Josh McCown's been signed. He'll now play for a team that started 22 quarterbacks since 1999. Browns fans, Jeff, will be saying to me, well, that was just about what we expected when we were 7-4. But it did. It just unraveled, didn't it? There was a time early in the season where they were exciting to watch. They were like the cardiac kids again. They were pulling out close wins, and then it all just went wrong.
Yeah, it did, and it really unraveled on Mike. And you know, I thought he did a really outstanding job early in the year. They won games, you know, they did. It kind of manufactured wins, really, in a lot of ways. But it just, you know, what happens in the league, I think, is that when you can get away with that for a little while, but after a while, it catches up to you because you got to be legitimate. And you know, the situation at quarterback, Hoyer did enough early on and you know, until he started making mistakes, and then he got exposed, and then they put Manziel in there, and that was just a horror show. I mean, I don't know if, you know, he's in rehab. I hope the kid is able to get his life together, but all the indications. I was in Cleveland last weekend speaking and talked to one of the Browns coaches, and all indications are that it's issues are beyond the rehab issues. You know, it's work ethic. It's, you know, how serious are you about being a, you know, a football player in the National Football League? Where are your priorities in your life? Those kinds of things that, again, those are the unmeasurables that teams really need to spend time on, because that's an awful expensive mistake if it turns out to be a mistake. And, you know, unless he gets himself together and you know, shows something next year, he may go down as one of the biggest busts of all time.
Yeah, especially with the headlines he made coming in. He's going to be in that Ryan Leaf, that, you know, just think in recent years, he's going to be in that Vince Young, Ryan Leaf kind of category, isn't he?
Jamarcus Russell. If we talk, you talk about those guys. I mean, Vince Young was in 2 Pro Bowls.
Right. This I was going to say, Vince's was a slower decline than this.
This guy hasn't won 2 games. I mean, I don't know if he's thrown 2 touchdown passes.
No,
so
he ran for one and made a big deal of it. But
I mean, that's what you're faced with here.
So it's Josh McCown, Jeff, who was partly, you know, Josh McCown was good 2 years ago in Chicago. I think last year with Tedford out through illness, you know, McCown was part quarterback, part coach in Tampa Bay. I mean, is this a good signing in terms of he'll be a good soldier if it is Johnny Manziel's team, or he could be the starter?
Well, I think that's what they're looking at here, is a guy that's going to come with maturity. He's going to come with a lot of, you know, football under his belt. He's going to come with stability. He's going to help the young kid help guide the young kid. I think that's a good signing for him, for them. Now, again, can he recapture that, year that he had in Chicago? You know, if you look at his career over time, you would say, well, that's an anomaly. That's just a one-off. And, you know, he'll revert back to be what he always has been, which is a backup. Or can he, recapture that? We'll see. I think there are some pieces around him in Cleveland. But again, now you say, let's continue down that line and go, okay, you got yourself a really fine tight end, except
he's a free agent.
Concussion issues, right? You have a frontline receiver, except he may not play next year because of substance abuse issues. You look at all that and you go, golly, I mean, they got a good offensive line. I mean, and, I thought the backs that their backs both showed last year.
Yeah, on that, Jeff, because I think because you allude to the running backs and the offensive line, Alex Mack went down with a broken leg in week six. They had one of the best rushing attacks in the NFL before he went down. And after that, it was tough for Terrence West and Isaiah Crowell, who did show some flashes, enough to let the Browns move on from Ben Tate. But they did miss Alex Mack, didn't they, who's one of the best centers in the NFL?
No question. And that's such a key position because he makes all the calls. He's the quarterback, basically, of the offensive line. But, I just really think that they're – when we watched them, Neil, when we had them on TV, you could see that that's what they need to do. They need to run the football, keep the pressure off the quarterback. But they had the ability to do that. And I thought those, like you said, those two young backs, came into the league and really made an impact. But, again, look outside at receiver. What do you have? Mm. Tight end's a big question mark for you. Is there enough around, no matter who's the quarterback, are there enough weapons around? I think they need a receiver. They got to find a receiver in free agency or they got to find a receiver in this draft. But they got to get a receiver and probably could use two. You look at some of the guys that they've got in free agency, that are guys that have a chance to be players. You look at Miles Austin. He's 31 years old, but he's been in the league and made plays. So that's a guy I would try and sign again if you can sign him back.
Here's the good news for the Browns, Jeff. They're one of the youngest teams in the NFL. They've got the 12th and 19th picks in round one, and they're third in terms of salary cap room with $53.1 million. So some of the moves you're talking about, they should be in a position to make them this offseason.
Well, yeah, and I think the first thing you want to do is you want to sign back your own. Mm-hmm. If they feel that, that Jordan Cameron's healthy. I mean, if they feel like he's not going to be a concussion risk, then that's a place you start. He's 27 years old. He's one of those rare tight ends that can play out wide and play online and block. And he's not a great blocker, but he's an adequate blocker. But he's a real good threat, as a receiver. And right now they just don't have enough weapons on offense. So that's a guy that I would certainly try and get back. I'd try and get Miles Austin back. And try and get in the draft and find yourself a couple people in the draft and free agency and get some ability to stretch the field. Because when you watch teams at the end of the year defend them, they just sank everybody in the box and they knew the quarterback couldn't beat them and, took away the run. Because eventually in the National Football League, you can do it. You can just go one plus one and you got more guys down there and you block and it's there. That's the end of the running game. If you don't have a quarterback or wide receivers who can beat one-on-one coverage.
Jeff, we've got about 5 minutes left trying to get some of the mailbag questions as well, just as we wrap up here. So defensively, they lost to Sean Gibson down the stretch through injury, Phil Taylor, Carlos Dansby. They've got a couple of good edge rushers, Paul Kruger and Barkevious Mingo. Of course, we know about Joe Hayden at corner. Offensively, they were 23rd in the NFL. Defense was 23rd. But do you think that's a better unit than that 23rd ranking would suggest?
If they're better inside,
yeah,
right? I thought they were very average at tackle, defensive tackle. Mm-hmm. I think Tashawn Gibson has a chance to be a really good safety. The guy that we haven't talked about that I like, and I know he's going to be a free agent, is Buster Skrine.
Yep.
That guy, because when you got Joe Haden and you're the other corner, you're going to see a lot of balls. Mm-hmm. And I thought that when we watched that kid on, you know, on tape and on in our broadcast, I thought he was a good young player. And those corners are hard to find. So, you know, that would be a guy I'd work hard to re-sign to. This defense can be real good. Mm. You know, Kruger is their best pass rusher. Barkevius Mingo, you know, is flashed. He's, you know, he hasn't really done it consistently well yet, but he's flashed ability. If they can find some big guys inside, you know, to help stop the run, stiffen them up against the run, I think I would move on from Dansby personally.
Yeah.
But again, that's just my feeling.
They play Cincinnati twice, Pittsburgh twice, Baltimore twice. So there's a tough division right from the start. They'll play Denver, Oakland, Tennessee, Arizona, and San Francisco at home. The Chiefs, San Diego, the Jets, Rams, and Seahawks on the road. Jeff, in summary, with the Cleveland Browns, we are going to talk about them a lot. We know that with Johnny Manziel there. Are they a playoff team in 2015?
I think they've got a chance. I really do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you got to look at them and say, the fact of the matter is they were 7-4 at one point last year.
Just didn't finish the job, yeah.
It couldn't finish it. Now, can they improve this offseason enough to get in that position again and be able to, you know, win enough to get yourself there? This National Football League is, you know, with all of the things that are going to come right now. If you're a Cleveland Browns fan, you're sitting on this on pins and needles right now saying, okay, where are we going to go on the 10th? That's the first big day, right?
Yep.
When that free agency thing tips off, we got money to spend. Let's go spend it, and let's go find us some, you know, some help at the positions, receiver where we need it, defensive tackle where we need it, you know, a linebacker where we need it, and then try and draft really well. And I think if you can do that, then you got a chance to be a playoff team.
All right, let's just take one question from the mailbag. We've already done questions from Jonathan, Justin, James Baker, Gary Pugh. Let's take this one from Luke King, who says, will Ndamukong Suh become the highest paid defensive player after free agency? And if so, who with? I think there's no doubt this guy's about to become the richest defensive player in the NFL and in NFL history, Jeff. And you can kind of understand why players of his talent level don't normally hit free agency. One thing he has been quite honest about, which other players aren't always, he said, I'm going to let my agent decide where I play. In other words, I'm going to strike it rich. So where are we looking? Teams with the most money? Is it Oakland? Is it Jacksonville? Is it somewhere like Miami? I mean, I guess Gus Bradley would welcome Ndamukong Suh, wouldn't he?
I think he's going to get paid, isn't he, Jeff? He is going to get paid. And you know, it's interesting, his comment, it wasn't about winning. It wasn't about, I want to go to a contender. I want to go someplace where I have a chance to win a Super Bowl. It's about, I'm going to let my agent do it. And, you know, that would indicate that, you know, let's let the bidding start and let's see how far it'll go. And now, again, you talked about some teams, Neil, that have substantial salary cap space, and you're talking about an elite-level defensive lineman, a guy that is a game changer. You know, he's a guy that you have to scheme around when he's standing in the middle of your defense. Mm. Now, usually it's the edge rushers and the corners that are going to command that kind of money. But with this guy, because he is such a dominant disruptive force inside, he, you know, like you say, stands to be the highest paid ever, I think. And, and you know, that's, you're going some because, you know, Revis is out there too.
He's not going to get a bargain deal.
We'll see
how this plays out, Jeff, in the next couple of days. One thing I would just say is Detroit haven't ruled themselves out of the mix yet either. I think they're going to try and make a play to keep him.
Yeah, and you know, certainly they should. Mm. You know, what will really be interesting to see is what if they don't get him, what do they do to replace him? Where do they go to replace him? You know, and as this thing, this is why free agency is so interesting, is once a team loses a player like that, an impact player, that means that they're going to go out and they're going to try and replace that guy. And if they don't feel there's a like player in the draft, and there are very few like him, that drives up the cost of all the other guys at his position that are free.
Right.
And so it's going to be interesting. if you're a free agent in the National Football League and you're a defensive tackle right now, you're rooting like crazy for Ndamukong Suh, because that, you know, the value, all those contracts are going to get driven up.
Well, Lions fans may have already glimpsed their future, because Ndamukong Suh is about to hit free agency. Nick Fairley is about to hit free agency, and they recently had a free agent visit from Kendall Langford. So maybe they've seen the writing on the wall, the Lions. Jeff, we'll talk all about free agency next week and more of our state of the franchise, but we will be right on the eve of free agency when we record next week, so that should be a lot of fun.
I think it's going to be really interesting to see this week as we go forward. You know, there'll be more and more talk and more about, you know, which direction teams are going to go. And now the mock drafts are about to start. You know, everybody now is starting to, you know, stack their boards in their meeting rooms, and they're out. The coaches are out now around the country working players out individually. And, you know, as we get closer to the draft, you know, all of these things factor in, because as you're building a team, if you're a GM, you want to play GM for you know, a week. Take this week with your team and say, okay, I have this much to spend. I need to spend it on these guys. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, and then start to factor in. We'll talk about the draft as we get closer to the draft, so you really have a chance to see what you would do if you were a GM.
All right, good stuff, Jeff. That's Jeff Reinbold. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. It's a USP content production, and we are sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network. Until this time next week, say goodbye, Coach.
Aloha.